The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Dark Side of the Pooch. He's Dr. Rab Stewart, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital out there. Beautiful work, beautiful day, wonderful place. And he joins us every single week to answer email questions, info@tonycurryradio.net. This week we're getting into pet supplements, giving a dog a broken bone, duck depression equals dog depression, and we've got a new pain scale for animals. But in the meantime, he's never a pain. He's always a joy to have in the show, and he's Dr. Rab Stewart. It's his show, Dark Side of the Pooch. Dr. Rab, how are you, brother? Everything good?
What a segue.
You like that?
You're a master.
Yeah. And I didn't even practice that. I just figured there's one way to get into you, and I know you're not a pain. Brought to you by Ed's Pet World, 879-1331. They've been around for nearly 50 years, and Seth's got some exciting news. You know, if you get onto Ed's Pet World, you see half pets and half toys. Go figure. It's like a guy who fixes the lawnmowers and also does your taxes. It's an amazing place. Check out Ed's Pet World, nearly 50 years in the business. Seth's going to be opening a brand new place. We'll have some more details about that. Unopened boxes of toys. We're talking Legos and Battlestar Galactica stuff. And then when you're talking the exotic pets, chinchillas, ferrets, tarantulas, birds, you name it, they got it all at Ed's Pet World, 879-1331. Before we get into our email questions, I always like to get into some topical news. 60 brands last week, supplements for pets, were recalled because they've killed many of dogs with elevated levels of vitamin A. They're omega-3 supplements for dogs. When did we start giving our dogs supplements? Is that a thing?
Yeah, there's a lot of good supplements for all kinds of stuff, for GI health and for skin and coat, for even kind of degenerative brain conditions. So, yeah, I mean, supplements. And, you know, man, you know, with doing the show, that there is not a shortage of people that want to capitalize on the animal market.
Rab, it is crazy. I mean, I cannot believe, I never realized, I figured there was some type of supplement, but I thought the supplements probably came in all these new dog foods, these farmer fresh dog foods and everything that we're feeding our animals, you know, right off the table now because they want to eat the same food we are. But actual, like, vitamin supplements for our animals, are they needed? I mean, if an animal's sick or something, I could understand where they're getting a deficiency somewhere. But I mean, a healthy dog, does it need supplements?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. That's what
it does not. So commercial, if you're feeding your dog, which I always recommend, if you're feeding your dog or cat a good commercial dog or cat food, it has everything in it that it needs.
Gotcha.
All the nutrients, vitamins, minerals, everything it needs. Unless you're feeding a really off the wall branded dog food, that may be, you know, anytime you're looking for a pet food, be sure that it meets the AFCO guidelines, AAFCO.
Okay.
And that it's good for all stages of life. There are some foods that are not good for all stages of life.
Yeah.
But, you know, most are. So just know that all dog foods aren't created equally. I don't know how many different brands of dog food there are. And even within those brands, how many different formulations there are. So I, you know, as a veterinarian, I cannot even pretend to know everything that's out there. But the thing that I can tell you is be sure that it's AFCO certified because you know it's good.
Okay.
But as far as supplements go, you don't need to give your dog or cat anything extra unless it's been recommended by your veterinarian. Like omega-3 capsules, there's a lot of conditions where you would want to give those. So if they have a dry coat or if there's some autoimmune disorders where that kind of stuff is really important to give, but to the everyday dog, mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. Don't need that. What does elevated levels of vitamin A do in an animal?
Well, I'm going to be honest here, Tony. I have no idea.
Okay. I'd rather you tell the truth because I had no clue. Because I thought when it came to vitamins, the stuff that you don't use, you pee out. It just comes out. I know when you take four vitamin C pills, you're just going to pee the vitamin C out. And evidently, it's not the same with animals.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you that the reason I don't know is because it's not something that I spend a lot of time recommending. So I never get into a situation where a dog has too much vitamin A.
Yeah.
because, and I have the same conversation with every pet owner that comes in. Do I need to give any vitamins? No, you do not. So, but I will look into it, and next week I will have an answer for you.
Okay, there you go. Also in the news, this Dark Side of the Pooch. You hear the show at least 5 days a week on the TKR app. Thanks to thousands of folks who have downloaded the app and, of course, wherever you get your podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast. And we're doing some brand new things where we're doing little blips of the show that are airing on Instagram. They're taking off, and people are loving those things. So be funny today, and we'll play that particular clip there on IG. You can find him, by the way, 208-0301, 208-0301, Rossbridge Vet on Twitter and the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. New legislation in Parliament was introduced last Friday for the compulsory cat microchip law. Evidently, there are roughly 39 million cats in the UK, Britain area, and 9 million of those cats aren't chipped, which is amazing to me because the fact that 30 million cats are chipped is just amazing to me. But they're wanting to set precedent and say that all cats must be chipped. Good idea?
I think if they belong to somebody, then yeah. I mean, I think that doing microchipping is super important for anyone who owns a pet. But I would assume, based on this article, that some of these aren't, they're just wild cats, right?
Well, the funny thing is, in the United States, if there's a cat that's lost, we don't want it back. It's just one of those, you know what I mean? So they're basically saying, listen, if you're going to take on the responsibility of owning a cat, we want to make sure we know who you are and your cat will be chipped. So they made it sound like, Poor kitty got lost and you really want your cat back. This is a way for you to find it. But I would guess that most cats that aren't chipped are cats that people really didn't want in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's good. Yeah. If you're gonna throw your pet away, we're gonna find you.
Yeah, we're not gonna want to chip that thing. All right. And also the Colorado State University has come out with a brand new pain scale for cats. It's called the Feline Acute Pain Scale. Now, we've got vitals, temperature, pulse, respiratory, and blood pressure. And in 1999, we added pain as one of our vital signs. Of course, you know what happened there. We started prescribing opioids and everything else. We had a huge epidemic. And then about 3 years later, or 3 years ago, should I say, they decided to no longer make pain a vital sign. And now when you walk into hospitals, you have the smiley face, right? Tell me on a scale of 1 to 10 how you're feeling. And if you're feeling like a 6, you'll say you feel like a 9. And if you're feeling like a 2, you'll tell them you feel like a 5 because you want them to give you preferential treatment. So now they've come up with this pet scale for cats. And so I would ask you the question, because dogs and cats can't speak, how can you tell if your pet is suffering from some type of pain?
So these things probably have a lot to do with their activity level, how often they're moving around in the house, how often, you know, they're eating their normal amount of food, how often they are just basically doing their routine behaviors. Mm-hmm. And it's highly subjective because what we have is a universal scale that we're applying to pets whose normals are different.
Yes.
So it's a very subjective thing, but I'm sure it can be helpful.
Yeah, and normally I would assume that obviously if your dog's yelping or your cat's making weird noises and it seems like it's in pain, you can kind of tell if your dog or cat's in pain. To go along with that question, I got my back dogs on the back deck right now, and I've got one of those child gates, right? And I put it above the stairwell. So they can't get off the deck. So I thought, I'm on the second floor. So, my Havanese, my little 7, 8, 9 pound Havanese, somehow ended up on the other side of the stairs. And the only thing I can think is he climbed that little gate and then jumped off the other side, not knowing how far it was because there's about 30 stairs that he probably went down. So long story short, last week about this time, his back right leg, he wouldn't put any weight on it. He was yelping every time we got near him. I just put him in his kennel, and my kids were like, you got to take him to see Dr. Rabb. And I said, I will, but much like children, I like to let things go 2 or 3 days because sometimes miraculously things seem to heal without spending $200 or $300 on my kid at the doctor's office. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. And if you've had more than one child, you understand what I'm saying. I'm not the guy, as soon as something gets a sniffles, I'm going straight to the doctor because it does seem to work it out. And that's the way the body works. The body wants to heal itself. So 3 days later, Frisco dog is now running on this back leg like nothing happened. My question to you is, if a dog does fracture a bone or break a bone, what would you do as a veterinarian for that animal? Do you put a cast on it? Do you let it go? How do you treat that?
It depends on where it is. There are some things that you can, you know, put a splint on it, like if they fracture a toe, that's something that can sometimes heal on its own. You don't have to do anything, or sometimes it requires a splint. But sometimes if it's bad enough, even the most, you know, even the smallest bone in the body will need some pretty, you know, serious treatment. So you can, sometimes you can do absolutely nothing. You don't have to do anything. Sometimes you splint them. Sometimes you can put in an external orthopedic device, like a plate is probably the most common thing that we do now. We used to do something called an IM pin, which is a very thin rod, and it goes in the medullary cavity of the bone, so the middle of the bone, it slides right through, and then you put some wire around it. And so that's an older way of fixing a fracture, and it's not as good as a plate. But those are, you know, the two main types of internal repairs. And then if something's really bad, you do external fixation. And so that would be where, if you've ever seen, they have like metal on each side of the outside of the limb. Yeah. And then it'd be a parallel external device on each side of the bone. And then they would have some perpendicular fixative things that go through the bone to hold everything in place. And so when that happens, you've had a really terrible fracture with probably lots of different pieces. But if you have most of the time when we have a clean fracture, where there's, you know, the bone's basically just not exploded. You can go in there and put a little plate on it, put some screws in there, and it'll heal fine. I mean, there's even some occasions where you'll do just a screw. You know, but those are a little bit fewer and far between, because most of the time, most of the time, you know, you've got a fracture that's kind of in the middle of the bone. It's pretty straightforward, but sometimes if you have a fracture towards a joint, then what you end up having to do is you fuse the joint. So the joint's kind of useless, but that's kind of, there's no alternative sometimes. So that was a long answer to the question.
No, it was a great question. And I have to ask you the question because everyone listening right now wants to know, what if you need to put a plate in a dog's leg, what are we talking about cost-wise?
Hey, you know, probably $2,000 or $3,000.
Yeah.
Depending on how bad it is.
All I could think of, I've never had to wear a cast, but I know how itchy it is. All I could think about was a cast over a dog's leg, just how itchy that would be. But listen, I'm in most cases, I think that and he was yelping pretty good. He wouldn't even let me touch his leg. But then like 3 days later, he's running in the backyard like he had missed a beat. So I was thankful that whatever it was, maybe he just sprained his ankle or something. Do dogs eat sprains?
They do. And there's no way he had a fracture, because those things, they're not going to get better in a few days.
Okay.
You know,
well, that's good.
And they're really, really painful. You know, you can't, they're going to be non-weight bearing for a long time.
Yeah.
So dogs will be non-weight bearing occasionally for really minor things, you know, like a soft tissue injury or something. But those things usually straighten out pretty quickly. So there's nothing wrong with sitting on it for a day or two, but I would say that if you sit on it for longer than a day or two and they're still not bearing weight, you probably got something significantly wrong, either a broken bone or maybe a torn ligament or something like that.
There you go. He is Dr. Rab Stewart, Ross Bridge Animal Hospital. They're the best to take all your pets and doggies and cats. He's the best. Dr. Rab Stewart, I followed him all over town, wherever he goes, I'm with him, and he has a great place out there, 208-0301. At Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on your Facebook page. A final question, then we'll get into some emails. info@tonycurryradio.net. So my daughter wanted me to get a couple of ducks. And I thought, ducks are a lot of work, a lot of mess. But it is springtime. We have a lake that's close to the house. And the thing you typically do with a pet duck is you raise it for about 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks, and then you let it go. And I thought this would be kind of nice. It would be domesticated a little bit. We go down and feed it. That'd be kind of fun. I could put it in the kitchen, put it in the back deck, blah, 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 blah. So I'm reading up on ducks, and they're very social animals. And I was told by this person at Tractor Supply Company, hope they don't mind me mentioning them. You're welcome for the free plug. That you got to give them a lot of attention because ducks get depression. And I said, what? And she said, yeah, ducks can get really depressed and they're not so just jolly like a normal duck. And it reminded me of a couple of conversations we had about our cats and dog friends that suffer from depression. So I kind of wanted to catapult into how do you know if your dog, and I'll use just dogs as an example because cats are harder to navigate, but how do you know if your dog's suffering from depression and what can you do about it?
Most pets are not going to suffer from the type of depression that we have.
Yeah.
They're going to, so the, what dogs and cats are going to get, and more so dogs, cats are pretty, cats are pretty consistent, you know?
Yeah.
But dogs, you know, cats are always somewhat fearful. But dogs, you can have really, really high levels of anxiety and fear, but it's not so much depression, as it is, they're just incredibly fearful and almost to a point where it's debilitating for them.
Yeah.
So we do put them on, certain types of medications that in people would be considered, antidepressants.
Yeah.
Like serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So that's fluoxetine or technically a tricyclic antidepressant like clomipramine, but it's for fear and anxiety and maybe fear aggression. So it's not exactly apples to apples, but we do use those same drugs because they do help with fear, fear anxiety and fear aggression.
All right.
So it's going to be more, you know, the dog, it's very antisocial, or it may be very aggressive when things out of their norm happen, a lot of either self trauma or destruction of your house if it's separation anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the kind of the things that you'll see. And since I am a doing a little bit of multitasking here, I also have your answer on your vitamin A.
Oh, killer!
So. Let me go back to that.
No,
so,
yeah.
It's vitamin A toxicity is extremely rare. So that's one of the reasons why I had to tell you I have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
So acute vitamin A toxicosis is really rare. You can see it chronically if you are if they're exposed to high levels of vitamin A for a long period of time. So it's like GI stuff that you'll see. But then the interesting thing. They get really rigid because they have cervical spondylosis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like inflammation of their cervical spine, and they get really tense with their muscles. So it's kind of like a musculoskeletal deal in a way, but it can also cause just regular GI problems. And then you, as far as treatment goes, if it's acute, you have to induce vomiting. So you have to, you know, if they've eaten a lot of it, you make them throw up just like you do anything else. If they've eaten chocolate or whatever. But then you just give them a lot of IV fluids. And as far as chronic treatment, you just have to remove the source, you know, of the vitamin A.
All right, there we go. We both learned something. I love that. Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital. Check him out, 205-208-0301. Of course, on the web, and you can also find them on Facebook at the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. Want to answer some mutt mail here? info@tonycurryradio.net. Teresa in Buckhead has birthing questions. She wants to know, how do you know if your dog is pregnant? How long does a pregnancy last? Does the diet need to change? Can you still exercise your dogs? And do we need a vet involved? She said outside, obviously, the shots that you give to pups when they're born. But do you need a vet involved if your dog's pregnant?
That's a lot of great questions.
Yes.
So not necessarily. You don't necessarily have to have a vet involved. There are tons of dogs that have puppies that the owner never knows the dog is pregnant, mm-hmm. believe it or not. So as far as how do you tell, sometimes you can just tell, you know, by looking at the dog, and you're not going to be able to tell until probably pretty close to when they're going to have babies. And to answer that question, the gestation period, it's around 62, 63, 64, 65 days.
Okay.
It really depends on when you're starting your timer.
Mm-hmm.
So some people will start it from ovulation.
some people will start it from conception. So if you're starting it from ovulation, it's going to be in the mid 60s. If you're starting it from conception, it's going to be in the low 60s of days. Okay. So their gestation period is really short. The best way to figure out if they're pregnant, the earliest way to figure out is around 30 days. You can ultrasound them. And, you know, we look for babies in there. You can x-ray them around 40, 45 days. And by that time, the skeletons have mineralized. And so you can see them on an x-ray.
Yeah, we did that. We did that with Maxie. It was awesome.
Yep. And as far as diet goes, you do need to increase their diet a little bit. It kind of depends on what food you're feeding, but 1.5 times of their normal diet, especially once the puppies come. It's more important that you increase the diet when the puppies arrive, more so than when they're pregnant. But you're going to want to increase the food so that the mother has plenty of food to produce milk and keep the puppies fed.
And exercise, keep exercising, or
yeah, I mean, you can let them just kind of do what they want to do. You don't have to really restrict them, but at the same time, if it's a working dog, you know, that has a real job, you probably, you know, want to back off that while they're pregnant. But I mean, if it's just, you know, walking around the yard or whatever, they're going to limit themselves.
Yeah. info@tonycurryradio.net. We get to as many emails as we can every single week here on Dark Side of the Pooch. You hear it at least 5 times on the TKR app, Tony Curry Radio, and wherever you get your podcasts. We're available in every major industry. Julie in Knoxville, she said, with spring coming up, and when we record this show, it'll be the first day of spring. Fleas and ticks, I know it's a year-round thing, but it certainly seems like fleas are more prevalent in the spring and summer, maybe because it's warmer, they're out, and they're biting more. She had heard that Lyme disease is rare in dogs. She wants to know why.
Because they're not, well, it's really common in some places. Like, okay. So in the Northeast, like, and for whatever reason, Connecticut has a ton of it.
Really?
So yeah, I mean, it's so in certain areas, yes, it is not common at all, but in other areas they actually vaccinate for Lyme disease in dogs. We do not do that down here because it is not prevalent, but in certain areas, I mean, it is rampant.
Okay. Mike in Abernathy wants to know, he's heard the dogs smell fear. Is it true?
I don't know that they can smell fear. But I think that they have a really keen perception of when someone is afraid and what the person does when they are afraid. I think dogs, they know what the body language of a fearful thing is.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't dispute that they can't smell fear, but I think it's more of, they're really perceptive and they know based on the way that we are standing and how we are standing and where we are standing, if we're afraid or not.
Yeah. If you get a dog that, obviously is, has some anxiety or it's fearful or doesn't know what you're all about. For example, Rainer, my oldest dog, great dog, very obedient, will only come when I get at his eye level. When I scrouch down, I could be a mile away. And if I call his name, he will run to me. But if I'm standing, when I call his name, he won't. And I've told my son, if you want him to come to you, get eye level. But I've also heard that if you're in a situation where you don't know the dog, it's not wagging its tail and it's acting kind of goofy, you don't want to make eye contact with it. What's the deal there?
I think there might be some truth to that, you know, not making eye contact.
Kind of like with your wife, your wife at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. You know, you got to be careful with eye contact with the wife, you know, late at night.
Yes.
You know, I think it depends on what your end game is, you know, so I don't know. I guess that depends on the wife.
All right.
But anyway.
Dr. Esther Rossbrook Animal Hospital. It's amazing how we're so much like our pets. Dan in Birmingham, he's got an observation because I don't have a question. He loves the show. He listens to it every week. Eventually, we probably need to get some phone banks going here so we can take some questions live. It'd be great. But he wants to know, he's like,
let's do that.
Yeah,
that would be so fun.
Wouldn't that be great? He's like, keep hearing these questions about why do dogs always stare at us? You know, you'll be sitting there watching TV and they're just sitting there at the foot of your recliner and they're staring at you, or maybe you're being intimate with your wife and they're staring at you, or you're on the phone, they're staring at you. He said, my observation is dogs like to do things that humans believe are really, really awkward. He said, think about what dogs do. They stare at you. They sniff in areas. They hump legs. They defecate in public, which normally for a human being would be just absolutely mortifying. He said, and that's one of the reasons we love our dogs is because they do things that we find very awkward and we find it funny. True?
Yeah, and I think they do things that we wish that we could do. Because think about, okay, yes. Like a dog can do, if someone does something wrong to a dog, we kind of let the dog do whatever it wants. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if someone comes into your house when they shouldn't, mm-hmm. a dog can bite them.
Yeah.
You know, but if we do, like, there's so many times people, like, they're trying to defend themselves and they're somehow the ones that are at fault. You know,
yeah.
But you know, a dog can yell at another dog because it does something it doesn't like. Like if you yell at somebody else, you're going to get in trouble. Yeah. You can't yell at people.
Uh-huh.
But all you know, all that stuff. You know, just fornicating in public.
Yeah, I know.
You know, right? Like yeah, dogs can do that, no problem.
And they have no fear for that. They don't feel awkward at all. It's just part of nature. Let me ask you this: if you could be a dog,
I think they want you to look at them. Oh. They're like, "Hey, look at me! Look at me! Look what I can do!" Yeah, don't you wish you could do this? Yeah.
If you could be a cat or a dog for one day, which one would you choose?
I would probably be a cat for. I think I'd be a cat for a day.
I think I would too. I think you'd get in more trouble.
Yeah, you can be really sneaky. And also people like it will leave you alone.
Yeah.
I think cats get like if you're in a mood and I just need a minute, they'll leave you alone. But dogs, everyone bothers dogs all the time.
Yeah, that's true. He's Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter. And of course, their phone number 205-208-0301. Dark Side of the Pooch. Send those emails, info@tonycurryradio.net. Brought to you by Ed's Pet World. They've been in business for nearly 50 years down there in beautiful Homewood. I get down there almost every single week. I get fish down there. They got chinchillas. They got sugar gliders. They got snakes, all kinds of beautiful snakes. They got cockatoos, rats, the whole nine. Cayman alligators, you name it, got down there. And of course, Seth's opening a brand new place. He does not want me to mention it, but I'll tell you, it's going to be awesome. It's a toy store. He deals in all kinds of collectibles, watches, and Battlestar Galactica, Star Wars stuff, all kinds of cool things. Buy, sells, and trades. So if you find some stuff up in your attic, go down there and he'll buy the stuff off you. It's Seth's Toy Closet, also known as Ed's Pet World. Until next week, my friend, wonderful show. I love having you on. I love you, and I'll talk to you soon.
Love you, bud. Hey, if Seth can find me a pinball table.
A pinball table?
Yeah. Y'all want a pinball machine.
What are you looking for?
Oh, anything. I was looking them up the other, and I know we're running long here. I'll be brief. But I was looking them up. My son was like, "Hey, Dad, can we get a pinball table?" Because he played one at a restaurant we went to this weekend, and I was like, "Yeah, let's check it out." Dude, do you have any idea how much a pinball machine costs?
About $8,000 or $9,000. If some of the new ones. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. I had no idea. I was like, "Yeah, sure, we can."
Yeah, there's a place
no called. Problem. Then I had to go back and say, "Hey, buddy, we're not getting a pinball machine."
Homer Brown is a good friend of mine who owns Bumper Nets there at the gallery. If you get a chance, he's got a full like 30,000 square feet of pinball machines. You'll go in there and you'll find them. It's pretty amazing. I think Seth does smaller stuff, but I will certainly ask him.
Yeah, a pinball machine.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.